Welcome back to The Deep Dive. I'm Sam Jory. Today we are getting into a really complex but absolutely critical topic. It's right at the intersection of national security, federal bureaucracy, and of course the software that basically runs the government. We are doing a deep dive into why U.S. federal civilian agencies should adopt checkmarks to meet initiatives, mandates, and mission requirements to secure and accelerate speed to mission. And this isn't just some, you know, theoretical chat. It's about looking at the most urgent problems the federal government is facing right now and seeing how a very specific security solution fits into their, well, their mandated budget and compliance strategy.
And I'm Jamie Rende. Our mission here is to take all this source material and really just break down the strategic context for you. What you're going to realize pretty quickly is that the U.S. federal civilian sector, what they call FedCiv, it's going through its most significant security transformation in maybe two decades.
Yeah. And this is not just an IT upgrade. It's a forced structural overhaul. Mm-hmm. And it's being driven by hostile nation-state attacks and some really aggressive executive mandates. So we have to understand the immediate market opportunities these forces are creating.
Okay, let's unpack that. When you say most significant transformation, you're talking about an environment where the old way of doing security, mm-hmm. you know, the traditional perimeter firewalls, network defense, that's all been proven to be, well, completely inadequate. We saw it with those massive supply chain campaigns. The big one, of course, was SolarWinds, and then those pervasive zero-day flaws like Log4j. That's the starting gun.
Exactly. Those incidents didn't just cause damage. They proved that just, you know, relying on that perimeter defense was a fundamental failure. I mean, if an attacker can inject malicious code into the software supply chain before it even reaches the agency's network,
then the whole model just collapses.
The whole thing. And you couple that with this urgent need for agencies to modernize these deeply entrenched, sometimes 30 or 40-year-old systems. They call them high-value assets, or HVAs.
So the core mission, then, is really about transitioning application security AppSec from being that small, late-stage sort of technical checkbox and turning it into a foundational pillar of national security and operational resilience. Precisely. AppSec has to move from being a nice-to-have before deployment to a must-have requirement that's embedded in the very process of creating the software.
Yeah.
It has to become a critical component of their Zero Trust Architecture, or ZTA, because the source material is really clear on this. The opportunity to win this business is time-sensitive. Agencies have an immediate mandated imperative to adopt a secure by design posture. And crucially, they have to find a way to secure their code without slowing down development.
Securing and accelerating their speed to mission.
Right. And that tension, that security versus speed, is really what Checkmarks is designed to resolve.
Let's jump right into the regulatory side, because this is where the market opportunity is really being generated. It sounds like the whole environment has shifted so dramatically that it's created what the source material calls a compliance cliff. And this is driven by a triad of pressures. You've got explicit regulations, the risk of modernization, and just the operational need for speed.
That compliance cliff is a great way to put it. For years, federal cybersecurity, it kind of relied on guidelines, you know, voluntary frameworks. That era is over. The shift to mandatory enforcement really began in May 2021 with Executive Order 14028, improving the nation's cybersecurity. This was the direct response to SolarWinds.
And what was the main directive from EO 14020 specifically about software?
It explicitly mandated securing the entire software supply chain, period. It recognized that the government doesn't just have to defend its networks, it also has to ensure the integrity of the code it buys and uses. And that was a massive paradigm shift. It established the principle that if the government can't trust the cable, it can't trust the mission that code supports.
Okay, so that's the high-level order from the White House. How did the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB, take that sweeping order and, you know, turn it into something real for every single federal agency?
That happened with OMB Memorandum M2218. This is the document that operationalized the EO. It required agencies to get specific self-attestations from every single software producer.
Every single one. Commercial, government-made, all of it.
All of it. Commercial or government off-the-shelf, what they call GOTS. The producer has to attest under penalty that they followed secure development practices. And this forced every agency to align their software procurement and development with the very rigorous NIST Secure Software Development Framework, or SSDF.
Specifically, NIST SP 800-218.
That's the one.
This sounds like a lot of paperwork, but the real hammer, the thing with real consequences, it comes down to one document, right? The C-Secure Software Development Attestation Form. Why is that document the fulcrum of this whole strategic shift?
Because it mandates a signature that comes with massive liability. The form, which CISA finalized and released in March 2024, it is the single most important instrument forcing this change. It requires the CEO of a software producer, or for internally developed GOTS software, the designated agency head or a senior official, to physically or electronically sign the document. And that signature attests that the software conforms to all those NIST SSDF standards.
Let's just pause on that for a second and really explore that personal risk. If you're the agency head or the authorizing official, the AO, and you sign this form, you are personally and institutionally vouching that secure practices were followed rigorously. So what happens if a major breach occurs 6 months later and it's traced back to a vulnerability that should have been caught?
That is the verification gap.
Yeah.
And it's where all the liability is concentrated. The AO cannot legally or ethically sign that document based on a good faith email from a dev team or some basic compliance spreadsheet. If a breach happens, and in the federal world, breaches are routinely followed by inspector general investigations, intense congressional scrutiny, the IG will immediately demand the empirical evidence that supported that signature.
And if they don't have it?
Without audit grade proof, the AO has potentially exposed themselves and their agency to sanctions, political fallout, and most critically, the immediate risk of having the authority to operate the ATO for that mission system revoked. It transforms an IT decision into a legal and risk management decision.
So it's not about checking a box anymore. It's about institutional self-defense. The need is immediate. It's existential. So how exactly does Checkmarx position itself as the critical platform that closes this gap? How does it turn that risky guess into a verified fact that the AO can confidently sign off on?
Checkmarx becomes the undeniable system of record for the entire attestation process. When you embed its capabilities like SAST, static application security testing, and SCA software composition analysis directly into the agency's CI/CD pipeline, the platform is automatically generating audit artifacts in real time.
Okay, so what are those specific artifacts the AO needs to see? It's got to be more than just a vulnerability report, right?
Right. The platform provides verifiable, time-stamped, audit-grade proof that satisfies three key requirements of the CISA form. One, it proves the software was developed in a demonstrably secure environment, showing every step of the testing process. Two, it proves the producer made a documented good faith effort to maintain trusted source code supply chains, validating all the third-party components. And three, and this is crucial, it provides evidence that automated tools were used rigorously to address the security of both the internal code and the open source components, with documentation showing what was fixed.
So for the AO, this system of record moves the signature from an act of faith to an act of documented assurance.
Exactly.
That level of forensic auditability is the foundation you need. Now, let's talk about the SSDF itself, NIST SP800-218. The federal software estate must be astronomical. How is automated testing the only path to compliance, not just, you know, the easiest?
It's not just the easiest. It's the only mathematically viable solution, just because of the scale. Federal software estates are often measured in the tens, if not hundreds, of millions of lines of code, and that's spread across thousands of distinct applications and services. The SSDF mandates that agencies verify that the software satisfies its security requirements. Trying to do that verification manually with human code reviews for that amount of code it's impossible.
It's just not feasible.
Not at all. Automated testing is the non-negotiable prerequisite for satisfying that verification component at scale.
And the advantage is that Checkmarx doesn't just spit out technical jargon. It speaks the language of the regulation, mapping its findings directly back to the NIST controls.
Absolutely. When an agency uses Checkmarx, they aren't just getting a list of bugs. They are getting a report that says, Control PS.5, Protect Software Integrity Satisfied. This direct mapping provides real-time compliance visualization for the CISO, satisfying that crucial verify requirement of the SSDF. But we need to look deeper than just standard code weaknesses, or CWEs. We have to consider the advanced threat model.
Tell me about the supply chain security capabilities here, because the attacks we mentioned, SolarWinds, Log4j, they were sophisticated nation-state level threats. This goes way beyond simple vulnerable dependencies.
Exactly. The SSDF heavily emphasizes protecting the integrity of the software from tampering, meaning intentional poisoning. Standard software composition analysis, SCA, it looks for known vulnerabilities, like an outdated component. Checkmarx's supply chain security, or SCS, capabilities address the malicious side of the supply chain, which is the immediate threat the U.S. government is facing.
Can you give us an example of what that malicious threat looks like in practice?
Sure. Think about type of squatting. This is where an attacker uploads a malicious package to an open source repository, and they name it something incredibly similar to a popular, legitimate package. Let's say Colorama versus Colorama. A busy developer might mistype the package name in their config file.
And boom, that malicious package gets installed.
It's installed and executed, and it could contain intentional backdoors or remote access trojans. The other major threat is repojacking, where a trusted maintainer's account gets compromised and the legitimate package is suddenly updated with a malicious payload.
So the Checkmarx SES capabilities are designed to analyze more than just the version number. They're looking at the source, the contributor, the behavior of the package itself.
That's the key differentiator. SES analyzes contributor reputation, package history, and inherent risk indicators, actively detecting these malicious injections. And this aligns perfectly with the SSDF requirement to protect the integrity of the software distribution against sophisticated actors. It's a higher order of security, you know? It's specifically necessary for the nation-state threat models the U.S. government is facing, which often involve intentional compromise, not just coding mistakes.
That wraps up the regulatory pillar, the stick of compliance. Now, let's pivot to the architectural imperative, Zero Trust Architecture, ZTA. OMB M2209 started ZTA with identity and network segmentation. But you're arguing that the application workload pillar four is the critical and often neglected component that has to be secured for ZTA to even work.
It's absolutely critical, yet it remains the most underdeveloped pillar in most implementations. ZTA's fundamental assumption is simple. Assume the network is compromised.
Always assume breach.
Right, and that forces a logical conclusion. If the network is compromised, the application has to be hardened enough to defend itself and its data. This is the definition of secure by design. And it relies entirely on the quality of that application workload. If the application is riddled with vulnerabilities, an attacker who gets past the network perimeter, which ZTA assumes they will, can just exploit the app and get the data anyway.
So how does Checkmarx ensure that application workload is inherently capable of defending itself?
Yeah.
How do you get security into the developer's hands early enough for it to matter?
By enforcing the concept of shifting security left, Checkmarx moves security testing out of that late stage QA phase and pushes it directly into the developer's tools, their IDE, their integrated development environment, and the CI/CD pipeline. The goal is to catch and remediate the classic flaws like SQL injection or cross-site scripting, XSS, at the moment the developer writes the code. By hardening the code base before deployment, you create a workload that is inherently more resilient and that fulfills the ZTA mandate of continuous verification and minimizing the attack surface.
That's a powerful internal defense mechanism. But modern federal systems aren't these big monolithic applications anymore. They're all microservices talking through APIs. If APIs are the new perimeter, how does Checkmarx API security fit into the ZTA mandate?
This is one of the most exciting capabilities, I think. In a ZTA environment, every single interaction, internal or external, is verified, and that verification often happens through an API call. APIs are the data exchange conduits for modern government. If an API is misconfigured, it can expose massive data sets, be it taxpayer records or veteran health info, just as easily as a poorly configured firewall did 20 years ago.
So what's the specific problem that API security solves in this context?
The major threat is the proliferation of shadow APIs. These are APIs that a developer might spin up quickly to solve an immediate problem. They deploy them without a formal security review, and they just sit there, invisible to the CISO, handling sensitive data.
And no one knows they exist until it's too late.
Exactly. Checkmarx API security capabilities are essential for discovering those shadow APIs across the entire federal estate, mapping their data flow, and ensuring that even the authorized APIs adhere to governance rules and aren't exposing sensitive data. This continuous discovery and verification of the perimeter is absolutely vital to the ZTA philosophy.
We also need to loop in another mandate here, a separate but related one. Visibility and logging. That's dictated by OMB M2131. That memo established logging maturity models EL1, EL2, EL3 for incident response.
M2131 is a separate but equally aggressive mandate. It requires agencies to achieve a specific level of logging maturity to help with rapid detection and incident response. What's fascinating here is that AppSec, via Checkmarx, contributes to M2131 compliance in two complementary ways.
Okay, let's start with the high-level one, the centralized platform visibility that a CISO needs for governance.
Right. The first way is governance and oversight. The Checkmarx One platform offers a single unified visibility dashboard. This gives the CISO a holistic audit-grade view across the entire application portfolio. They can see what was scanned, when it was scanned, and what was found and fixed. This centralized visibility provides the necessary audit trail and transparency to satisfy M2131's requirement for deep visibility into system security.
Okay, and the second way, it addresses a deep technical paradox, right?
Yeah.
You need to log more data to comply with M2131, but you have to make sure those logs don't become a massive new security liability themselves.
This is the nuance the source material highlights, and it's a critical, often overlooked detail. Developers, in their rush to debug and comply with M2131, they often generate these verbose logs that inadvertently capture extremely sensitive information.
Like what? Passwords, API keys.
Passwords, session tokens, API keys, even large blocks of personally identifiable information, PII. If an attacker breaches the network, the logs become a goldmine. Checkmarks SAST is designed to detect and prevent this. It identifies specific code weaknesses like improper output neutralization for logs, CVE 117, or insertion of sensitive information into log file, CVE 532. By catching these logging flaws early, Checkmarks ensures that the agency's effort to comply with M2131 doesn't accidentally create a major privacy breach.
So it's two birds with one stone. The platform gives you the compliance visibility, and it secures the log data required for that compliance. That moves us perfectly into the competitive landscape, and specifically the strategic differentiator that creates this massive advantage, the FedRAMP High Mode.
This is, I would argue, the single most powerful tool the strategic account manager has. Checkmarks One has achieved FedRAMP ready status at the high impact level. This isn't a technical footnote, it is a regulatory wall that separates them from the majority of the market. Competitors, notably Veracode, are often only authorized at the moderate level.
Why is that distinction between moderate and high so absolutely crucial for the FedCiv sector, especially for those high priority agencies we're about to talk about?
The difference is the severity of the potential impact. The Federal Risk and Authorization Management Program, FedRAMP, sets a security baseline for cloud services used by the government. The moderate baseline applies where a loss of data or service could have a serious adverse effect. The high baseline is mandatory for systems where the loss of confidentiality, integrity, or availability could be expected to have a severe or catastrophic adverse effect on operations, assets, or individuals.
So if an agency is handling the government's crown jewels, the high-value assets moderate is legally insufficient.
Correct. For the agencies modernizing their most sensitive systems, they are legally restricted to deploying only FedRAMP High solutions. This immediately restricts the addressable market for competitors like Veracode, which cannot legally host the government's most sensitive data.
Where exactly are these high-value assets concentrated in the civilian sector? Give us some specific real-world examples.
They are concentrated wherever the public's most private data resides. So think VA and HHS, patient health information, PHI, records for Medicare and Medicaid, healthcare data managed by CMS and the CDC. Exposure there would be catastrophic for individuals. Then you have the IRS and Treasury, taxpayer and financial data. The integrity of that financial data is a national security concern. And finally, DOJ and DHS, law enforcement records, controlled unclassified information, or CUI. Any system dealing with data categorized as high impact requires a FedRAMP High solution.
Which makes Checkmarks the default mandatory choice for these critical modernization programs.
It has to be.
This also plays directly into that continuous federal effort to reduce tool sprawl. Platform consolidation must be a key part of the value proposition for the CISO, who's struggling with all these overlapping contracts and fragmented visibility.
Tool sprawl is an endemic problem. Agencies acquire tools piecemeal, one for legacy SAST, another for open source scanning, a third for configuration files. This fragmentation leads to operational inefficiency, obscured risk, and just higher costs. The CISO needs to satisfy FISMA's monitor and measure requirements, and that's impossible with a fragmented toolset.
So Checkmarks One becomes the ROI argument for retiring redundant contracts.
Absolutely. Checkmarks One is a unified cloud-native platform. It encompasses SAST, SCA, infrastructure as code security, and supply chain security. This level of consolidation allows agencies to retire redundant legacy contracts, think older Fortify or Sona type licenses, and replace them with a single platform. This dramatically lowers the O&M costs and simplifies the security posture reporting that's mandated by the federal government.
We've established the regulatory why and the competitive how. Let's get tactical. If you are the strategic account manager, where do you focus your energy? We need a clear priority targeting matrix based on agencies that have the right budget, the regulatory pressure, and active modernization programs right now.
We have four top targets, starting with the most immediate and critical opportunity. The Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA.
Why is the VA so urgent, and what specific projects should we be tracking there?
The VA is under intense public and governmental pressure to protect veteran data, which makes its security overhaul a top national priority. Their key initiative is Project Thunderdome, which is their sweeping implementation of a zero-trust architecture across the entire enterprise. The urgency for checkmarks is embedded directly in the budget documents for the VA and their partner, the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA.
You mentioned a smoking gun requirement in the budget justification. What does that document explicitly mandate?
The budget justification documents explicitly mandate the procurement of 17 medium-sized application security stacks, APS, to support application boundary protection and API security. This is not a discretionary item. It is a funded, mandated line item directly supporting the ZTA architecture.
So the engagement strategy has to be positioning checkmarks as the AppSec layer for Thunderdome.
Yes, and leveraging its API security module to protect the critical exchange of patient health information, PHI, across their microservices environment.
And the funding is secured.
Yes. The VA benefits from significant dedicated IT modernization funds, specifically allocated through acts like the PAX-ET Act. The money is available and it's earmarked for these specific security procurements. And given the extreme sensitivity of veteran PHI, the FedRAMP high status of checkmarks is a non-negotiable requirement.
Okay, our second critical target, the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, and the Treasury Department. You said this is a longer, more strategic play.
It's a huge undertaking. The business systems modernization, BSM, and the enterprise digitalization initiatives. The IRS is rewriting some of the most ancient mission-critical systems in the entire government, including the legendary individual master file, the IMF, which is the repository for all taxpayer data.
And that IMF is currently written in what legacy assembly language and COBOL?
Precisely. We're talking about code that is 50 years old. The modernization involves taking this ancient, often undocumented logic, and rewriting it into modern languages like Java. That process represents an enormous security risk, the modernization risk.
Explain that risk.
Yeah.
Why is translating old code into Java so dangerous from a security perspective?
When you translate 50-year-old logic, you risk introducing two major problems. First, logic errors. The original code may have contained subtle assumptions or legacy workarounds that, when you translate them to Java, introduce new unexpected behavior and security gaps. Second, new vulnerabilities. Modern languages rely heavily on third-party dependencies, which immediately exposes the new code base to all those supply chain threats we talked about, log4j style issues.
So a robust SaaS solution is needed to act as a kind of mandatory security spell checker as the new Java code is being written.
Yes. To prevent the introduction of catastrophic vulnerabilities into systems that handle trillions of dollars.
And does the IRS have the budget for this scale of procurement?
Yes, and this is crucial. The Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, provided billions in specific multi-year funding earmarked entirely for technology upgrades at the IRS. The budget is available now, dedicated to these projects. And again, because we are dealing with national-scale taxpayer financial data, the high-impact nature mandates a FedRAMP high solution.
Our third target. The Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and CISA. This feels more like a target of influence, not just a direct procurement play. Why is CISA so important strategically?
CISA is the mandate author. They wrote the Secure Software Development Framework. They manage the attestation form. They are driving the national SCRM and Secure by Design initiatives. So strategically, they have to practice what they preach. Furthermore, the DHS Science and Technology Directorate, S&T, is actively requesting funds for software supply chain validation.
So the goal is to position checkmarks as the operational standard inside the agency that sets the standards for everyone else.
Exactly. We position checkmarks as the reference architecture for CISA's own compliance. If CISA uses checkmarks to validate the software they produce and acquire, that's the most powerful endorsement possible for the entire federal ecosystem.
So engagement there would be with the DHS OSIISO and the S&T directorates.
Correct, to influence the future direction of federal policy and tech adoption.
Finally, the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS, which is tightly integrated with that massive Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program, CDM.
HHS is a core participant in CDM, specifically CDM Defend Group B. The primary concern here is protecting enormous quantities of patient health information, PHI, managed by components like CMS and NIH, which again triggers the FedRAMP high requirement.
And since agencies primarily buy security through their major systems integrators, or SIs, who holds the key contract for Group B,
Booz Allen Hamilton, or BAH, holds the $421 million CDM Defend Group B contract. The CDM program is rapidly expanding its scope to include requirements for zero trust maturity. This provides an immediate entry point. AppSec data, the output from checkmarks, must be integrated into the CDM dashboards as part of the ZTA expansion.
So the strategic focus is working directly with Booz Allen to make sure checkmarks is that integrated AppSec data feed.
Yes, for their CDM dashboard offering to HHS agencies.
That transitions us perfectly into the strategic ecosystem, the SIs and partners. Agencies buy through contracts owned by these SIs. So let's start with the one you call the strategic kingmaker. Booz Allen Hamilton.
BAH is the kingmaker because they hold the two most critical implementation contracts tied to our priority agencies. First, they manage that massive $1.86 billion Thunderdome production agreement at the VA. They are responsible for implementing those 17 application security SACs. If BAH doesn't choose checkmarks, the deal is lost. Second, they execute the CDM Defend Group B contract, which covers HHS and, critically, the IRS.
So what's the pitch to BAH? It has to be more than just, this is good security. It must impact their bottom line, right?
The pitch has to focus on operational efficiency and specifically margin protection. BAH often works on these large, complex, fixed price development or modernization contracts. On a fixed price contract, every hour they spend fixing a bug discovered late is margin lost.
Ah, so if Checkmarks catches critical vulnerabilities early, right in the developer's IDE,
it dramatically reduces the cost and time BAH spends on remediation later. The value proposition is Checkmarks increases BAH's profitability by ensuring faster, secure delivery and reducing rework and warranty risk. The SAM has to align with BAH's national cyber leadership to ensure Checkmarks is the preferred, pre-vetted AppSec engine for their major federal programs.
Okay, next up, Deloitte, heavily involved in the IRS modernization, which we know is crucial because of all that IRA funding.
Deloitte is a key transformation partner. They hold a significant contract for IRS digital services. They're selling the IRS on the promise of speed and efficiency. They cannot afford a major security failure that derails the whole initiative.
So the action plan is to position Checkmarks as the enabler of secure speed.
Exactly. Checkmarks provides the continuous automated reporting required to prove to the IRS that Deloitte is delivering secure, compliant code at the rapid pace required by the modernization mandates.
And finally, we have Carahsoft, the master aggregator, who deals with the critical fulfillment side of things.
Carahsoft is the tactical execution engine. They hold the GSA MAS contract and facilitate lightning-fast procurement via the NASA SUPV contract vehicle. Their value is speed, quote, to cash. The SAM must train and leverage Carahsoft to rapidly execute end of fiscal year, or EOFY, use or lose flush money opportunities.
We should probably explain what use or lose flush money is for listeners who might not be familiar with federal budget cycles.
Good idea. Federal agencies are allocated a budget for the fiscal year, and if certain funds aren't obligated by September 30th, they lose those funds. This creates a frantic period, often in Q4, where agencies flush remaining funds on necessary IT purchases. These are typically smaller, immediate needs like security tool upgrades or pilot programs.
And Carahsoft's role is essential here because they can process orders through SEWPV so quickly.
Exactly. It allows the strategic account manager to capture those funded mandates quickly. They need to be proactively trained to include the FedRAMP high checkmark solution in every DevSecOps or Zero Trust bundle they quote.
That brings us to the crucial part of the strategy, the engagement playbook. The federal customer is not monolithic. We have to tailor the value prop to the specific persona we're addressing.
This is essential. We have three key personas to engage. Let's start at the top. The authorizing official or agency head, often the CIO or an assistant secretary.
What keeps them up at night? What's their core pain point that Checkmarks resolves?
Their core pain point is personal and institutional liability. They are the political appointees or career executives whose signatures are on that CISA attestation form. They're personally accountable for the system's operational risk. They are the ones who face the congressional hearings or the IG investigation after a failure.
So the Checkmarks value proposition has to be entirely focused on risk mitigation.
It's risk assurance. Checkmarks doesn't just promise security. It provides verified, independent, third-party validated evidence necessary for the ATO and the attestation. This shifts the signature from a personal leap of faith to an evidence-based sign-off. The engagement must involve the Office of General Counsel because they're the ones advising the AO on liability. The pitch is about protecting the institution and the individual.
Okay, next, the Chief Information Security Officer, the CISO. Their world is all governance, compliance, and managing complexity.
The CISO's pain points are visibility, FISMA compliance, and tool sprawl. They are constantly fighting complexity-disparate security tools, leading to blind spots and fragmented data. They need a comprehensive, auditable view of their agency's risk posture while also reducing O&M costs.
The pitch here, then, is consolidation and mandated compliance.
Yes. Unified visibility and consolidation. Checkmarks 1 gives them a single pane of glass correlating SAST, SCA, and IAC data across the entire agency. This unification directly supports the visibility requirements of M2131 and ZTA, while providing a clear ROI argument by allowing them to retire those redundant legacy tools and simplify FISMA reporting.
Finally, the person who actually uses the tool every day and is judged on output, the DevSecOps lead or cloud architect.
The biggest pain points are friction and false positives. Security tools that slow down the agile CI/CD pipeline or flood developers with thousands of inaccurate alerts are actively resisted, ignored, or even bypassed. This persona is judged on enabling speed to mission.
If security slows down deployment, the security team is seen as the enemy.
Exactly. So the value proposition here is developer experience. Checkmarks integrates natively and non-intrusively directly into their existing environment, their IDE, Jenkins, GitLab, whatever. Security happens where the developer is already working. And crucially, the platform's high accuracy and its ability to prioritize only the exploitable vulnerabilities, the ones that truly matter, ensure that developers focus their limited time on fixing real issues, not chasing ghosts.
This makes security a helpful partner, not a roadblock.
Right, and it enables that speed to mission that agency leadership demands.
That's a truly comprehensive breakdown of the personas.
Yeah.
Now, before we wrap up, we have to look at the competitive landscape again, but with the specific context of the FedChief environment. We need detailed counterpositioning strategies. Let's start with the largest, Veracode.
Veracode is a significant historical presence, but their critical weakness in this high-impact market is simple and non-negotiable: the lack of FedRAMP high authorization. They are authorized at the moderate level.
And the counter strategy relies entirely on amplifying the legal restriction imposed by that gap.
Aggressively so. The SAM has to frame the conversation around the high impact data classification. For the VA's PHI, the IRS's financial data, moderate is insufficient. The conversation should not be about features, it should be about legal compliance. The critical question for the account manager to pose to the agency's risk management team is this: can you legally and ethically risk putting veteran health data or taxpayer financial data into a cloud solution authorized only for moderate impact?
Checkmarks is high ready, separating the mission critical from the simply useful.
Exactly. That question legally restricts Veracode out of the most valuable modernization opportunities.
Next, Sonatype, a strong vendor primarily focused on software composition analysis, SCA.
Sonatype is niche. While they're excellent for repository management, they are primarily focused on SCA finding vulnerable packages. They lack a robust, enterprise-grade, full-spectrum AppSec platform.
So the counter-strategy is consolidation and advanced supply chain defense.
Right. Why manage and pay for Sonatype for SCA and a separate vendor for SES, IAC, and API security? Checkmarks 1 provides all of these in a single platform, which lowers the total cost of ownership. And furthermore, Checkmarks provides sophisticated detection of malicious packages, type of squatting, backdoors, that goes beyond Sonatype's focus, addressing the nation-state threat model more completely.
And finally, Synopsys, which has a massive portfolio of acquired tools like Coverterity and Black Duck.
Synopsys is a powerful name, but their weakness is integration complexity and architectural fragmentation. Their suite is an integrated portfolio of disparate acquisitions. They often run separate scan engines with separate data models, and they lack a truly unified cloud-native user experience.
So getting the tools to talk to each other requires a lot of effort from the agency.
A huge integration effort, which costs time and money. The counter strategy is platform unity and cloud-native ease of use. Checkmarks 1 was built as a unified cloud-native platform from day one. It reduces the integration burden and simplifies compliance reporting.
That is a highly detailed view of the competitive landscape. Now let's synthesize all of this into a rapid, executable plan for the strategic account manager. What does the 30, 60, 90-day action plan look like?
The plan must be focused and decisive.
Let's start with the first 30 days, intelligence and alignment.
Days 1 to 30 are about high-level intelligence and aligning with gatekeepers. The SAM must map the buying centers for the Tier 1 agencies VA Thunderdome, IRS BSM. Immediately align with the critical Booz Allen Hamilton program managers responsible for Thunderdome and the CDM Defend Group B contract. Understand the precise technical requirements for those application security stacks. And crucially, they should review the FedRAMP marketplace to identify any agencies currently using moderate competitors whose systems are being upgraded to high impact, which signals an immediate mandated shift.
Days 31 to 60 shift to targeted engagement in a pipeline generation. This is where we create the sense of urgency around the CISA attestation.
The core action here is the attestation readiness assessment campaign. This campaign specifically targets CISOs and AOs with the message, you cannot sign the CISA Common Form blind. Let us prove your readiness. Offer to run a pilot scan on a high-value application and generate the necessary attestation artifacts. This creates immediate value and addresses their liability pain point. Concurrently, they must engage Carahsoft to proactively identify potential EOFY flush funds available via NASA CB.
And the final push, day 61 to 90, execution and closing.
This is the time to drive concrete adoption. They need to push hard for Checkmarks adoption with the Deloitte-led IRS modernization teams, specifically targeting the legacy COBOL rewrite projects where SaaS is non-negotiable. And strategically, they must formalize the partnership with CISA, aiming to establish Checkmarks data as a foundational AppSec feed for the federal CDM dashboard. The ultimate goal is to cement Checkmarks as the de facto system of record for software security verification across the entire .gov domain.
That was an exhaustive, granular report. It's clear that the shift in the federal civilian sector is profound, moving entirely from optional security practices to a mandatory, legally enforced compliance structure.
The central thesis is undeniable. The combination of executive mandates EO 14028, OMB M2218, and the CISA attestation form has created a non-negotiable need for automated, verifiable security testing. Agencies are now legally compelled to prove their software is secure with audit-grade evidence.
And Checkmark's unique advantages, its unified platform, its ability to address malicious supply chain threats, and its legally significant FedRAMP high-ready status validated for the government's most sensitive high-value assets. We're talking taxpayer financial records, veteran health information, and law enforcement data. This status is the moat that separates it from competitors.
Right, and it puts it directly in line for the biggest, most funded modernization programs at the VA and IRS.
The mission for this strategic account manager is defined by that convergence.
Mm-hmm.
Secure the code that runs the government, and do it with the required legal and architectural compliance structure.
Exactly.
So here's where it gets really interesting, and this is our final provocative thought for you to consider. The conversation has fundamentally moved past if government software needs security verification to who can legally and securely verify the code that runs the government's critical national functions. Because of the personal liability faced by the authorizing official, choosing a security platform is no longer merely an IT or technical decision. It has become a necessary act of regulatory compliance and institutional self-defense. And this massive, irreversible shift defines the future of federal IT spending for the next decade. A powerful nexus of law, budget, and technology driving the future of national security. Absolutely. Thank you for diving deep with us on this crucial federal strategy. We'll catch you next time on The Deep Dive.